The Epilogue. Mr. Bagthorpe's thankfulness was short-lived, as it turned out, because when they arrived home, it was to find that most of his wine had blown up in their absence. Some of it, indeed, was still in the process of blowing up. The floor, ceiling, and walls of the kitchen were spattered with red and yellow juices, and broken glass was strewn everywhere. It was at this stage that the Bagthorpes realized that in their haste to retreat they had forgotten Mrs. Fosdyke. They had also forgotten Great-Aunt Lucy, but did not notice this until later. Nobody dared enter the kitchen, because a wine jar blew up just as they were opening the door. Mrs. Bagthorpe was quite distraught. "How shall we ever use the kitchen again?" she cried. "We dare not touch the bottles. They are as volatile as gelignite." "Henry must move them," said Grandma. "He would not heed a mother's warning, and must pay the price." "Or get the explosives and anti-bomb squad in," William suggested. Mr. Bagthorpe was by and large in favor of this, even though the suggestion had been made in the spirit of sarcasm. He was unwilling, however, to risk the attendant publicity. What they did in the end, then, was diffuse the remaining bottles themselves. They did this by crouching behind the kitchen door, and hurling bricks and stones at the jars and bottles. None of them was very good at aiming, and a good deal of Mrs. Bagthorpe's blue Staffordshire pottery ended up in pieces. Mr. Bagthorpe's wine, per bottle, had cost rather more than vintage champagne, William later worked out. The exploding of the wine bottle certainly sounded the knell of self-sufficiency. Even Mr. Bagthorpe could now see that it would be cheaper to revert to being unself-sufficient. Once the bottles had been diffused, the Bagthorpes gingerly advanced into their shattered kitchen, just as the telephone rang. Jack picked his way through the debris and answered it. The voice on the other end of the line was unmistakable. Jack listened numbly to the text-strewn effusion that followed. When at last the voice stopped, "Jolly good, Aunt Penelope," Jack croaked. "I'll tell the others," and hung up. He did not, of course, tell the others. By tomorrow morning they would know anyway. They would read it in the newspaper. He returned to the kitchen. "Wrong number," he said, but nobody was listening. "Let your grandmother in through the front door, Jack," his mother told him. "She cannot be expected to go through all this. She must need to rest." She did not, of course. Adrenaline was coursing through her veins as furiously as through anyone else's. At this point, Tess, who had gone running straight off into the darkening garden when she had hurled her share of bricks, returned in a state of near hysteria. She, too, had caught a glimpse of Daisy's tureen of maggots, and had put two and two together. Daisy had dislodged her dead mouse experiment. "I'll kill her!" she screamed. Nobody attempted to dissuade her from this course of action, even Grandma, who had by now realized that Thomas, as well as Mrs. Fosdyke and Great-Aunt Lucy, had been abandoned at the Knoll. She was evidently not sufficiently confident of the effects of her intensive training to be sure that he had killed or severely maimed the other two animals at large, and her pride would not allow her to telephone and find out. It later emerged that the only casualties had been human ones. When the dust finally settled, all that had really happened was that the Bagthorpes had returned to normal, or as normal as they would ever be. Self-sufficiency was abandoned, hopes of a legacy from Great-Aunt Lucy relinquished, and Mrs. Fosdyke finally persuaded to return, once the kitchen had been redecorated. Mr. Bagthorpe and Uncle Parker each had sufficient ammunition to last them in their rows for months, if they spaced it out properly. Jack himself was pleased with the long-term outcome of the final debacle. Of all the pets owned by the family, Zero alone had been absent and free from all blame. He had been guarding Jack's comics up in his room, even through all the exploding going on below. Even Mr. Bagthorpe conceded his innocence. "Numbskulled and mutton-headed that hound may be," he said, "but at least he's not a killer." which was the nearest he would ever come to paying Zero a compliment. The end. You have been listening to Bagthorpe's Versus the World by Helen Cresswell, read by Kara Schallenberg.